I declare the meeting open at 5:30 PM. I welcome councillors, management and members of the public in attendance to the City of Melbourne. We respectfully acknowledge that we are meeting on the traditional land of the Kulin Nation. This place is now known by the name of Melbourne. Melbourne is one of the great multicultural cities of the world and a significant meeting place. For the Kulin Nation, Melbourne has always been an important meeting place and a location for events of social, educational, sporting and cultural significance. Could I take this opportunity to notify members of the public that the meeting is being recorded and will be made available on the City of Melbourne website before close of business tomorrow. The unconfirmed minutes of the meeting will be available from the City of Melbourne's website as soon as possible. Should there be any queries relating to the conduct of the meeting, the documentation or the submission process, please speak with a member of the Council Business Team after the meeting. Could I ask that all mobile phones be turned off for the duration of the meeting? The agenda comprises four reports from committee and one item of general business. We've received apologies from Councillors Watts and Wood. If any councillor has either a direct or indirect interest as defined in the Local Government Act 1989 in relation to a matter to be considered by committee, please disclose the type and the nature of the interest prior to consideration of the item. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of open meeting number 14 held on Tuesday the 4th of June? Could I also note that we have had a change made in the wording of those minutes picked up by the redoubtable Councillor Oak, where we unfortunately change on page 5, exciting to existing. You sure? We change exciting to existing, I think. Not that it isn't both, however, but it's existing infrastructure, not exciting infrastructure. Noting that that is a change in the minutes of the meeting, could I call on a councillor to move the motion? Councillor Oak, thank you. Seconded, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, all those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. Could I call on a councillor to move a resolution adopting the minutes of special meeting number 15 held on Tuesday the 18th of June 2013? Thank you, Councillor Leppert. Seconded, Deputy Lord Mayor. I'll put that motion. All those in favour, those against, that's carried unanimously. Thank you. Are there any matters arising from the minutes of the previous meetings? In accordance with the Council resolution of the 26th of March 2013, a 15-minute period is provided at the start and the end of the meeting for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I now invite questions from members of the public. Please, could you tell us, please come up, tell us your name and away we'll go.
Thanks, Lord Mayor. Peter Renner, Chair of the Committee of Management of Freshwater Place Residential.
Thanks, Peter.
I thought I might have maybe 2.5 minutes rather than 90, given this.
This is just for a question, Peter.
Well, it's got a question at the end.
Yep, that's fine.
It's got a bit of a preamble.
Go right ahead.
Good, thank you very much. Lord Mayor and councillors. Councillors will no doubt know of a new application to develop the Queensbridge Hotel and adjoining sites in Queensbridge Street, South Bank, with an application for permit lodged with the DPCD on the 27th of May. This is a new application as the development is now planned for 1 to 23 Queensbridge Street. The development has been supersized, now comprising over 28% more mass at 139,000 square metres, a 408-room hotel, 604 apartments, 630 car parks, a tower 276 metres high with a width of over 55 metres. Together with Prima Pearl, which is under construction, the Falls Tower at 25 Queensbridge Street, for which a planning application has been granted by the Minister, QBT2 will form a street frontage wall of 160 metres in length, range between 211 and 276 metres high, contain 1,797 apartments, 408 hotel rooms, over 1,400 car parking lots, have a tower separation of 10 metres between each of those three towers and then also Freshwater Place, cause havoc to traffic flows with vehicles accessing the property from the city grid. May I go on?
Go for a bit, Peter, then if you could ask a question, that'd be great.
This density
you can frame a long question, that's okay.
It's not a long question. This density would be unprecedented in Australia and the developed world, let alone Australia's most livable city. The Minister for Planning has recently gazetted the amendment to the South Bank Structure Plan, C171, now enshrined as Schedule 60 in the Melbourne Planning Scheme. QBT2 violates virtually every prescription in Schedule 60. The council is on the public record conceding that it had let down the residents of Freshwater Place on its support of the original QBT application, saying that if it had its time over again, the outcome would be different. And the question, given that the council reneged on its promise to allow Freshwater residents an opportunity to address council on QBT 1 before its response to the DPCD, what assurance can Freshwater Place residents and indeed the residents of Southbank have that they will now have a full and open dialogue with council on this latest outrageously opportunistic proposal?
Thanks, Peter. Thank you. Could I ask Jeff Laura in that case? Jeff, is we get a chance to comment on this new development, do we not?
Yes, Lord Mayor, that would be what we would expect.
Can that then be scheduled for a future Melbourne committee where the residents could present to us in 3-minute blocks as they normally do?
Yes, Lord Mayor.
Peter, is that...
Lord Mayor, that this is too important just to be up here in 3-minute blocks. I'd like to request respectfully that councillors and indeed the planners of Melbourne City Council are made available so that we can have a dialogue and consultation with them prior to any decision coming forward to this meeting where it's virtually a fait accompli.
Okay.
We believe that presenting
No, I've got that. I've got that, Peter. Let me ask, is there any problem with the normal sort of consultative meetings, Jeff, that we would have in order to help us frame a response to an FMC meeting?
No, Lord Mayor, I'm getting nods from the planning branch that they will be able to do that.
Then in that case, the answer to your question is, Peter, we can do that. Remember that all we get to do, though, is to comment, not to decide. But you can certainly help us to shape our comments. Is that, are you happy with that?
That would be...
Sorry, does any other... Councillor Ong, Councillor Mang, do you wish to make a comment?
This is our new automatic policy. Is anything over 25,000 where the Minister's responsible, even though we aren't the responsible authority, it has to come to FMC. We've changed that policy. So you're requesting, obviously, an additional consultation meeting before we deal with that report, and I think that's absolutely reasonable given the history and the scale. So I think I'll certainly be available. I'm sure we'll get multiple councillors there and the officers to comprehensively hear your views before we vote and publicly debate on our submission to the Minister on this proposal.
Thank you. Thanks, Lord Mayor.
Thanks, Peter. Are there any further questions? Thank you. In that case, at 3 p.m. today, the following submissions were received in accordance with the Council's Conduct of Meetings Local Law 2010. In relation to Agenda Item 6.2, Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C209, Public Open Space Contributions, a request to speak from Anthony Vandercrat's resident. In relation to Agenda Item 6.3, application for a planning permit, which is for 261 to 275 Abbotsford Street and 135 to 139 Arden Street, North Melbourne, request to speak from Dr. Jane Pointer, resident, and Andrew Clark, Matrix Planning Australia, and items of correspondence from Dr. Jane Pointer, Andrew Clark, and Nicholas Von Arx, resident. In relation to Agenda Item 6.4, Road Safety Plan, request to speak from Anthony Vandercrat's resident, Damien Cotagnotto, spokesman of the Independent Riders Group Melbourne, and John Ecott, Executive Victorian Motorcycle Council, and items of correspondence from Damien Cotagnotto and John Ecott. Is there anybody whose name I have not read out who would like to address us on any issue tonight? Thank you. Most of our submitters are very experienced, but I remind you, you have 3 minutes to address the committee. We adhere to that time limit. There's a counter on the wall behind me, beep sound at the completion of 2 minutes, and then there is another minute to conclude your address. A final beep sounds to signal the time allocated has finished. Could I advise members of the committee and the public that where the committee makes a decision on the basis of fewer than 6 members voting in favour, the decision may be referred by a councillor to council for decision. Could I now call on Councillor Ong to assume the role of chair of the meeting in relation to the planning portfolio?
Thank you, Lord Mayor. There are 3 reports from management for consideration under the planning portfolio. The first item is agenda item 6.1, the proposed easement variations and works affecting parts of Bourke Street pedestrian bridge over the Southern Cross Station in Docklands. Would councillors like a presentation on this item? No. Yes. You have a question for officers? Councillor Oak?
Just a clarification. In the recommendation from management on the screen, we can't see the part I'm going to refer to. At 7.3, it refers to the easement variation at the eastern retail pods, and it notes that a planning permit application has already been granted. Given notice. So we're just... I'm referring to the final sentence there about reporting back to Future Melbourne Committee. When would you expect that to come back to committee?
Councillors, the public notification period is almost closed. I would anticipate that we would be coming back within the next fortnight.
Okay.
Councillor Leppard, you have a question?
Just on that issue, I think it would be great if it did come back to Future Melbourne as opposed to via a briefing paper. Is there any objection if we tweak that slightly during the debate to ask that it does come back to Future Melbourne? Would that be compromising any statutory timelines?
We'd have no issue with that at all.
Councillor Leppard, would you like to then change 7.3 as well? Okay. All right. Thank you, Ms. Minky. On that note, I'd like to move the motion with the highlighted change in 7.1.1 that's up on the screen. Call the councillor to second the motion.
Councillor, can I just say, you do have leave by our rules to very briefly explain the impact of the changes you are making rather than going into debate before you call for a seconder, should you desire to do so.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. The reason I put that in is in the actual key issues part, point six, it talks about that in the future there may be a desire to remove the works and have the easement reinstated should the long-term changes on user level warrants this. Now, one of the things is that this is for 10 years, but we feel that if over the coming years and the change in patterns impact the pedestrian movements, this particular addition allows us as a council to then move to request the reinstatement of the easement and allow improvements in pedestrian access. So I've added that in just to cover for that possibility.
Thank you. I'll take it that Councillor Ong has moved that.
Councillor Oak, second that? Or would you like to make further amendment?
I'd like to second with a further amendment at 7.3 to remove the final words and put a full stop after
committee.
Future Melbourne Committee, exactly.
I'm happy with that.
Angela?
Oh, yeah, remove the bracket. Yep. Thank you. Councillor Oak, you seconded? Okay, with the changes? I'm happy with the change. I'll just quickly say that, look, this has come to us before and we've had further questions which officers have addressed in the documentation to us, so I'm happy with it to proceed with those additional changes. And any other councillor like to speak to the motion?
The seconder, Mark.
Seconder, would you? Councillor Oak.
Only to say that the changes to the recommendation go to my concerns. Number one, your addition at the request of council is of importance to me. I think that bridge does get very busy, and I do have a concern with removing of public space, that it could become even more congested during key events or even just during large football games. So I think that given we're given the ability to request that they're removed is a good addition to the recommendation. And at 7.3, my concern was, as noted by the manager of urban design, that the removal of public space with the eastern retail pods is out for obviously for a planning permit review. So we'll get another chance to discuss that when it comes back to Future Melbourne Committee. But I do have a concern, as noted in the report by the Manager of Urban Design, that there's a removal of that space on the bridge again, potentially causing conflict with the large crowds that are often on that space.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Are there any other councillors like to speak for the motion? Councillors to speak against the motion? In that case, I'm not making any further comments, and I put this to the vote. All those in motion, notice, please, and support. In favour, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. Right here. Second item on the planning portfolio agenda is agenda item 6.2, the Melbourne Planning Scheme Amendment C209 Public Open Space Contributions. Would councillors like a presentation on this particular item? If not, we have a number of speakers. Okay, yes. I now call on Mr. Anthony van der Kratz, resident, to request the opportunity to address the committee in this matter. Anthony, you have 3 minutes. You know, the 2 minutes the people sound, have 1 minute to complete.
Councillor Ong and councillors, I support the proposal for the City of Melbourne to obviously seek contributions from developers for open space. Of course, there are concerns as to how that money is going to be spent in the near future. The planning scheme is pretty consistent. It requires that the City of Melbourne have these series of overlays and that the money is put aside for future projects in open space. I think it's an excellent idea. Unfortunately, the City of Melbourne's planning scheme over the years has failed the citizens of Melbourne, particularly in respect to open space. It's obviously advantageous if our architects and urban designers could consider the excellent work of Palladium, who is well known for his urban design development, particularly when it comes to local urban open space. Clearly, that whenever we're considering open space, it's important that we consider the integration of that open space, not just in its singularity, but also how it interacts with the planning of traffic management and residential amenity per se. It's not an isolated entity itself. One of the main concerns is the funding models for all the various infrastructure that the City of Melbourne has to put in place. We already have overlays in respect to some of the underlying engineering services that need to be done, the water drains, etc., and we've got the open space proposal. What concerns me is that for some reason we haven't got the car parking waiving levy put in place. There are provisions under the planning scheme, 45.0906 and 52.062, where the City of Melbourne can establish overlays which would allow it to collect sums of money in lieu of car parking that may or may not be provided. I'm somewhat concerned as to whether or not the City of Melbourne is looking at this issue, whether or not they will be seeking in some cases where there's no clear community benefit to recoup some form of funds from the developers to offset the impact that the not providing car parking would have on the immediate amenity of the area. I think that's my main concern, and I would like to see the City of Melbourne seriously take a look at the car parking levy entitlements, so in order that it can collect this money and spend it in the future. If it doesn't do this, I fear that it's just putting the cost and the burden off into future generations who later on will have to find the money to fund these sort of changes that inevitably will be required.
Thank you, Mr. van der Kratz. Let me take a seat.
Just clarifying something here. When I was reading the responses, I just saw that there was an Environmental Resources Management Proprietary Limited, and when you look closely at the submission, they are doing it on behalf of Central Equity. So although Central Equity are not involved in this, and neither do they say they've got an actual parcel of land, they've engaged a consultant to make an argument on their behalf. Central Equity are a donor to our campaign. And therefore, I think even though it's sort of it's a company on one without direct interest in the land, nevertheless, a company that's made a donation to my election has made a submission. So I just think, I mean, I'm not sure there's actually a conflict because it's sort of a two arm's length. But when I looked at the actual submissions, that's the point. They actually now declare they are acting on behalf of a donor. Yeah. So I think it's a conflict.
Yes, Lord Mayor, in that case, that means I declare conflict too. And Deputy
good
Chair,
luck to the rest of you.
Can you take it over? Oh, yes, I declare conflict because they also donated to the Gary Singer campaign team.
We'll need the minister to give us a wave. Okay, well, we don't have a quorum, so this item will lapse and we'll need to seek probably some advice from the minister as to whether it can be done under delegation or under some other authority. So we'll move along to the next item and we'll need to recall our balance of our councillors. We didn't spot it. Well, this is where Bev...
I think I've discovered the secret to expeditious council business. I'll simply declare a conflict and be back in here within 35 seconds. It's outstanding.
We're two down.
My apologies on that item and... Thank you to Lord Mayor for picking that up. And all right, we're now to agenda item 6.3, application for planning permit TP 2012-617, 261 to 275 Abbotsford Street and 135 to 139 Arden Street in North Melbourne. Councillors, like a presentation on this agenda item? Yes?
Can we maybe just ask some questions? And if you want a presentation, by all means, sorry. Go ahead.
Councillor Oak. Mr. Williams, could you do a quick presentation?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The site that we're considering is here. There are four properties involved. This is an old petrol station. This is an office building. This is the Fisher Engineering Building, which is the only graded building. And this is an ungraded office building. The objectors are Mr. Von Arx, who lives here, the Rowans, who live there in Morby Place, Dr. Pointer, who lives to the immediate south, and Ms. Farrah, who owns but doesn't live in, a recent residence here. There are three more objections from the North and West Melbourne Association and two objectors in Victoria Street, which is about 400 metres to the south. This is the subject land in detail. This is Ms. Farris property and Dr. Pointer's. This is the Fisher Engineering Building, and you'll notice that the actual building envelope here is up to there, and I'll show you an aerial photograph in a moment of the detail of that. This is the petrol station, and this is Anderson's Lane, which runs down to Little Lothian Street. This is a quick summary of the surrounding developments. You have these in your papers, so I won't dwell on them now. If I might go into a bit more detail here, this is the Fisher Engineering Building. Got finger trouble here? Right. This is Fisher Engineering. This is Dr. Poynter's building, which is a degraded building. And from here south, there's a series of degraded buildings in a level 2 streetscape. The streetscape level changes here and becomes level 3, a lower level. That's ungraded. This is degraded. The office building is ungraded. And then there's the ungraded petrol station site. So this building is now an isolated, degraded building in a level 3 streetscape. And if I go back to the aerial photograph... Sorry, forward to the aerial photograph. The heritage advisor recommended the retention of this building, but the only interesting fabric is the very front. So the area at the back is not of heritage interest, and we did consider requiring the applicant to integrate that into their development, but it's impractical for a number of reasons. I'll go back to the streetscape shot. It has a crossover in the middle, which the applicant doesn't wish to use, and which we're pleased to see the end of because of the tram stop here. We would only be retaining a piece of facade in this case, and the whole design of the building is completely incompatible with what the applicant wants to construct. So though we're reluctant to dispense with degraded buildings, we think that it's more of a hindrance than a help to keep this one. This is a shot from the north. And Anderson's Lane is just down here. This is a signalised intersection, but neither of these streets, even though they're quite major streets, are Vicroy's main roads. This is a summary of the proposal. There are 57 dwellings proposed with 60 car parking spaces. Now, there was some concern about lack of car parking. In fact, this is in a car parking limitation area. So the car parking supply is almost exactly what the planning scheme anticipates. We're actually allowing them to have two car parking spaces fewer than the small retail outlet would require. And we're allowing them to have two spaces more than the dwellings would require. There are 2 3-bedroom dwellings on the top level. They wish to have 2 car parking spaces for those 2 dwellings and 1 space for the others. And we're accepting that. That's a summary of the planning controls, which again you have in your papers. And these are the elevations of the amended plans, which came in May. They've been changed significantly, not to keep the graded building, but to accommodate to some extent the comments of the heritage advisor, who wanted the elevations changed to have more vertical emphasis than the original design. So this is designed to be more consistent with the existing fabric around this area in the heritage overlay than the earlier design. This is the detail adjoining Dr. Poynter's property, which is here. The applicant has removed 2 pieces of fabric from there and there, which you can see in this drawing, that and that. They're quite small removals, but they make a significant difference to the level of sunlight access to the solar panels on the roof of this building. This is the essential problem we've been dealing with, and we've been discussing the performance of solar panels in some detail with Going Solar, a company which is in the 60L building, which we mentioned, and which has done a good deal of work for us in the past. The tribunal cases that we quote, there are 2 of them that have directly involved the City of Melbourne, say that there should be no unreasonable overshadowing or blocking of solar access, and what's reasonable varies with the circumstances. Now, in this circumstance, we have a 4-storey height limit, but 1- and 2-storey buildings nearby, so it's a difficult juggling act for us to come up with an answer, and we've been asking Going Solar to give us some technical advice on this. I'll elaborate in a moment. These are the shadow diagrams after the application has been amended, and the removal of fabric is just enough to avoid having shadow fall on these 6 solar panels of Dr. Poynton's roof. This is at 9 a.m, midday, and 3 p.m. So in each case, the shadow falls just short of the panels. There's a concern about overlooking from Dr. Poynter as well, and we've analysed this to what we think is a satisfactory level. A person standing here at 1.7 metres height to eye level can't see below that point here and can just see the very top of a window in Dr. Poynter's property. The 9 metre distance, which is the res card standard, is exceeded. It's slightly more than 9 metres to that window, and the overlooking could just, if the observer here was in exactly the right spot, sorry about that, could just see a person or a part of a person at the back of this studio area, but it complies with res code. Now, the solar panel performance, I'm learning what tricky little devils solar panels are. Going Solar has analysed several generalised cases for us, and that's what these performance graphs are. But they say they're able to analyse this particular case for us in much more detail and accuracy over the next few days. And they've provided us with some suggestions about how solar access might be improved and the performance of the existing solar panels on Dr. Poynter's roof be improved by a series of technical modifications. But in general, what happens is that where there's no shading, the blue is a loss of efficiency because of the intrinsic performance of the panel, and the green is an inverter loss. The inverter loss stays the same, but if there is shadowing, the collector efficiency drops dramatically. And the next graph shows that in more detail. This is a north-facing set of panels. This is a generalised graph of how much energy can be harvested from the panels month by month. And if there's extreme shading, and this is more extreme than in the current case, then the level of energy that can be collected drops to that. And what we're hoping to have from the consultants in the next few days is a more detailed version of this, which we expect will show that in this case, where the shading begins just after the equinox, there will be a loss of solar harvesting potential of about 20%. It's also possible to model the hot water service, and the hot water service does actually gain heat even on overcast days, but the third device that Dr. Poynter has on her roof, the Solarmate, which heats air, is really only effective when direct sunlight shines on it, and it's difficult to come up with a technical answer to that device.
Any questions for Mr. Williams? Councillor Leppard?
I've got one, but just before I ask that one, could you read the legend on the right side graph and let me know what the scale is on that y-axis? What are the three coloured lines actually representing? I can't read it from here, that's all.
These are three options depending on the orientation of different panels. This is a generalised case, it's not the particular one. This is a north-facing installation. This is a northeast, and the red one is a northwest. This is the north. You can ignore the other two coloured ones and concentrate on the black one. And it's month by month.
Thank you for that. My other question is a little bit more of a side issue. I'm sure we'll get back to the substantive point in a moment, but we did get a submission from someone who hasn't requested to speak, I don't think, and I assume you've seen this, Martin, saying that some objectors were given more attention than others. Can I just check with you if you have any comments on that particular submission, and secondly, confirm that the processes followed have been adhered to, that we haven't breached any of our internal processes?
We haven't breached any internal process. The reason for not talking to the others was that the bases they had for objection, we think, have no weight in the planning scheme. If I can go back to the very start. I the objector who was concerned about lack of consultation was here. No, that's across Arden Street, Abbotsford Street rather, which is a 30-metre wide road with a tram line in the middle. And we don't believe that the objections that person has would be resolved by any consultation process. We think that they're simply an intrinsic opposition to the form of development that the 40-metre height limit results in. We saw no chance of negotiating that.
Councillor Leppard, no more questions? Thank you, Mr. Williams.
Sorry, could I ask one?
Yes, Lord Mayor.
What are the permitted hours of use of a petrol station? Aren't they 24-hour by right?
No.
Yeah, I think they are.
That one didn't operate 24 hours, but yes, I think it could have.
Yeah. It could have. Okay.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Williams. Sorry, Lord Mayor. I now call on Dr. Jane Poynter, resident requested to address the committee. Dr. Poynter, you have 3 minutes. After 2 minutes, you have a beep, and then you have 1 minute to conclude.
In a minute, I'll ask you to put up the diagrams at the second part of our submission. Have you got them here? No. I sent it in yesterday. Yeah, that's right. Thank you for this opportunity. We have just completed a renovation of our property that was fully compliant with Council's planning and heritage guidelines and which incorporated solar efficient appliances and other energy saving measures to achieve a greater than 6-star energy rating. We were aware from the start that we were on a difficult block. We had an 8.7 metre high wall on the north part of our boundary, or part of the north, to the north on the back part of our boundary, a single storey 8 metre heritage setback at the front, planning requirements not to overshadow our southern neighbour, and an approved 4-storey development less than 10 metres behind us. While we did not have to get a permit, as stated in the decision, to get our solar panels, to install our solar panels, they were clearly marked on our plans all the way through. And until this decision was published, we were never once told or made any comment about whether we should site them on our roof or whether it was suitable or otherwise to do so. Quite the contrary, on the 19th of September 2012, I was advised by Council's Planning Department that we should continue to proceed with the installation of our solar panels. We submit that the following decision, as was shown by Mr. Williamson, has the effect of reducing our PV panels up to 50%, a reduction on our solar hot water service up to 25%, and a reduction in the efficiency of our solar air heater in winter months of, in fact, 100%. The solar air heater is designed to work during the day. It heats the internal temperature of the house up from about 14 degrees to 18 degrees every day that the sun is out, requiring us to use less top-up heating in the house. We'd chosen this technology over looking at geothermal, which was prohibitively expensive on a small site. We draw your attention to diagram one in our submission to you. And we, in fact, would like a couple of small changes. The removal of two very small apartments on the southern boundary that are 53 square metres each, and the enlargement of two others by 20 square metres each, and their terraces by 9 square metres each. And this would completely obviate the cost to us of sourcing and installing an alternative heating source and the continued cost of reduction in solar hot water and electric solar contribution. We also would seek with that council waive that our solar panels will be visible from the front over the top of our parapet, so they'll be visible from the street, and that the applicant pay to relocate our panels into that position. Thank you. Look at that. Spot on.
Councillors, have any questions? Yes, Lord Mayor.
Jane, I understand what you want us to do, and that is to offer an amendment that deletes those things. We are generally loath to do redesign on the run, But our problem is often it's easy for us to do those sorts of things knowing that it won't be acceptable to the applicant. They will go to VCAT and you may most likely lose. That's the quandary we find ourselves in. So you ask us to do something that, as I say, we're loath to do on the run. Do you feel there's any further scope for negotiation with the applicant to achieve some of the outcomes that you want?
I didn't see that, Andrew. The applicant and I have maintained good relations throughout this process. And I have obviously been the objector that they have negotiated with. We are not entirely satisfied with the overlooking. We would like, still like that stepped away a little because that is our kitchen, somewhere that we spend a lot of time. I am aware of all the issues of equinox to equinox on solar panels, but sooner or later a decision has to be made to actually protect a house.
Can I promise you, we really understand that, and unfortunately you find yourself in a wedge case where you're one of the first where we've had to deal with this, where someone operating within limits nevertheless has an impact that we want to obviate.
Hmm.
I'll ask the applicant the same question, but as you get closer and closer to what might constitute agreement, at some point one party's going to say no. And the difficulty I don't want to be in is you know, having the comfort of saying, oh, well, we've done our job, only to find you get a worse result through the judicial process. So, I mean, would you be amenable to further discussion
absolutely.
If the applicant were? And the applicant may not be.
Absolutely. We're always open to negotiation. We have been open to negotiation right from the start.
I'll ask the applicant the same question.
No worries. Thank you very much.
Yes. Councillor Main, you have a question for the Speaker?
Jane, can you just further explain, are you saying that there should have been more guidance from the council when you did your spend as to the planning rules and the potential for future overshadowing?
There are some comments made in the decision which suggest that we didn't do enough due diligence on various items. We spent a long time in this planning process because of the heritage issues on the front of our property, and we were never given... It's kind of always been obvious that this would be a development site, but the site has been the way it has been for the 13 years that I've lived there, and nothing has ever changed. So it's sort of like we waited and we waited and we could have kept waiting and nothing may ever have happened. So we were not given any guidance by accounts, by planning, as to the solar panels which were clearly marked on our roof. It was when I last had the discussion with council, Andrew had already started the planning process for the development, and we were still encouraged to put solar panels on our roof. If I had not been encouraged to put them on at that point in time, I might have changed my mind and not spent $6,000 on a solar system and installed something else when we had the house pulled apart. Retrofitting now is going to cost 4 or 5 times as much money.
Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor May. Thank you, Dr. Poynter. Now I'll call Andrew Clark from Matrix Planning Australia, who's also requested to address the committee. Mr. Clark, you have 3 minutes, and after 2 minutes the beep will sound, and you have 1 minute to complete.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, and thank you, councillors, for this opportunity. My name's Andrew Clark. I'm a director of Matrix Planning Australia. I act for the permit applicant as a town planner. As you heard, the principal issue raised is the overshadowing of the roof, so I'll confine my comments generally to that. However, I think that the context of that objection is to be considered that this is a site in North Melbourne, which is a large site. It's a strategic redevelopment site. We have planning policies which encourage intense residential development of such sites, and it's in that context that this application needs to be considered. And with respect, the issue that's before you is somewhat of a storm in a teacup. Nevertheless, we appreciate that Ms. Poynter is our nearest resident, and we have gone to some lengths to try and address the issues that she's raised with you today. This area is a four-storey height limit area. We don't exceed that limit. We note that there are no standards that apply at the moment in relation to solar penetration of such rooftop devices. We also observe that there's an existing equivalent two-storey wall along part of that site, not at the front where the single-storey part of Ms. Poynter's site is, Dr. Poynter's site is. But nevertheless, that creates a bit of an issue in terms of trying to reconcile a four-storey development outcome over the majority of the site with her retention, with her desire to retain solar access to her panels. So what we've done is we've considered her objection, we've gone back and said, how can we redesign this to accommodate what's a reasonable outcome? And what we've adopted as a reasonable outcome, or a more than reasonable outcome, is that there be no overshadowing of any of her solar panels at the equinox. And we think that that's a pretty high standard and a pretty admirable standard to achieve. In relation to, for example, secluded open space, there are standards that apply between 9 and 3pm at the equinox, but they don't say that you have to totally not overshadow that open space. They have standards within that time limit when you can overshadow that open space. We've raised the bar above that and said we won't at the equinox overshadow those solar panels at all between 9am and 3pm. I've been provided just quickly with some diagrams that Dr. Poynter provided with her submission, and I just note that I can't interpret those because they show the angle of the sun at the winter solstice, but they don't tell me what time of the day it is. And so, for example, at 9am in the morning, the sun has an elevation above the horizon at midwinter of 12 degrees. So if you were to use another standard.
Yeah, I think, Andrew, the time's up, and we might have a couple of questions that you can then respond a bit more.
I'm happy to take any questions.
Okay. And, yeah, Lord Mayor.
Andrew, can I ask you, do you think there's any further room for negotiation with Dr. Poynter, or have you come to the end of where you're prepared to go?
I think that we have been very generous compared to what we know about VCAT decisions on this issue. We've adopted the equinox as the standard. I doubt that my client would be prepared to go any further in terms of built form outcomes. There are suggestions of us paying for relocation. I can get instructions about that from my client. I don't think that is a major issue, for example, if it avoided a VCAT hearing.
So for instance, if we were, and I'm not by any means preempting this, because it's a wider policy decision about visibility of panels from the street and a heritage property, but if we were to, in this instance, be able to waive that, you think your client would look favourably on reimbursing Dr. Poynter for relocating those?
I have no doubt of that if a VCAT hearing was avoided, because it would be cheaper to do that than to go to VCAT.
Yeah, thank you.
But can I just say, and you'll need, in terms of putting that in as a permit condition, you wouldn't be able to do that, but you can take advice from your own staff.
No, I understand that. Thank you. That's helpful.
Yes. Any other councillors have a question? I was just wondering on the matter before, maybe here officers can clarify, because this is a heritage overlay and the Dr. Poynter's house is in the heritage. The current requirement is that there are certain controls on protrusions on the roof line, right? Mr. Williams? Yes, you can have a look at the diagram. Thank you, Andrew.
These are the existing solar panels.
Yep.
And one of the options that we've been discussing with the consultants going solar is not to disturb them, to leave them there, because they work fine from the 22nd of September to the 22nd of March. So I'm working to some degree after that. One suggestion would be to put three or four more solar panels here which is set back from the street and wouldn't be readily visible from the heritage streetscape, and to link them up in an electronically different way. And then there are micro-inverters, so-called, which you can attach to every panel, so that if one panel's shaded, it doesn't interfere with the efficiency of the others. Now, we've asked them the question, we haven't got the answer yet, but we think there might be a relatively cheap and quite effective way of maintaining the solar output from panels on Dr. Poynter's property. That's one option, and there are others as well to do with the hot water service. So there are technical options which may not cost
a lot
of money.
So you're saying that this is effectively putting it on the northwest or the southwest side? Southwest.
The area we're looking at is there, which is behind the adjacent property to the south, so you wouldn't be able to see them easily from the street. If you put them right up here, they'd be very visible above the parapet, so we're reluctant to agree to that. But farther back is not a problem, and we'd like to see what the comparative outputs are of different solar arrays. I'm going solar within a couple of days to that question.
Okay. Mr. Williams, that's an interesting. Thank you for that. We're learning more about PV. All right. That's the two speakers. Any further questions? If not, I'll move the motion that's up there to issue the notice of decision, and then I'll make some further comments after. So I'm asking for a councillor to second. Yes, Lord Mayor, thank you for seconding. First of all, I'd just like to thank both Dr. Poynton and Andrew for coming and presenting, because this is, I guess, the first time that we've actually come across, but we have discussed at length within among councillors and also with officers, that in view of the City of Melbourne's four-year plan and the current plan under the sustainability directives, that we are trying to encourage more solar panels within the city. However, that also means it has an impact, which is impacted directly by our other strategy of planning for future growth, which is increasing densification within some of our urban growth areas. So this conflict will become more regular feature. And we have to think about that now. In discussing with officers, both from the sustainability branch and also from the planning branch, the sustainability branch is driving this particular process at the moment, which then will come back to us, to council, on the recommendations, which could lead to work to be done by the strategic planning unit for a proper planning scheme amendment to address these issues into the future. But at this stage, we do not have within our planning scheme specific controls to address these. And so my hope is that the applicant and the neighbour will be able to talk further, and with some of the inputs that have come in and looking at the diagrams and also what Mr. Williams have said, there could be an outcome that's achieved that could be positive for both. It's a difficult one, but as the Lord Mayor said, we're quite loath to make these changes to a particular application on the run. We would prefer to move it forward or reject it altogether, which means it goes to VCAT. And in VCAT, the applicant has a possibility to actually put the original proposal back on the table. So it becomes, the outcomes cannot be predicted. And I'm hopeful that both parties will work together to reach an outcome that achieves the majority of both parties' requirements. So that's the reason behind for me to move this, but bearing in mind with the comments on the difficulties and the issues we face now and into the future. And Council, hopefully in the next year's plan, will start working on some of the planning scheme amendments to address these. But it's still early days. We are just beginning to encounter this. Lord Mayor, would you like to say a few words?
Thank you. I'll just say that This is a difficult sort of decision to make. I accept that Dr. Poynter has acted in good faith on advice that she was given from the council and guidelines that we have, and have made a substantial investment on the basis of that, but nevertheless finds herself in a position where, as I said before, she's kind of jammed, where we don't really have in our planning guidelines or planning scheme anything to determine what we do around solar panels, the two VCAT decisions that Mr. Williams put up notwithstanding. And I note that this proposal does actually meet the requirements of the only guidelines we have, and they are the VCAT guidelines. So to some extent, the city finds itself in a strange position. We're silent on a particular policy around solar panels and the efficacy of those solar panels given nearby development. Dr. Poynter has acted in good faith, but the applicant, I would also point out, has made application under our guidelines and within those planning guidelines, and has also negotiated in good faith and has reduced the scope of the original proposal. So I think we've got good faith on all sides, but we're still a little bit apart. I've seconded this, and I'm prepared to support it on the basis of the applicant's representative saying they are prepared to negotiate in good faith with the applicant about the potential supplementation, for want of a better word, of the solar panels. As Mr. Williams said, that may be that it can be done, and I hope supported financially by the applicant, without breaching our heritage guidelines. That would be a wonderful outcome, I think, if that could be the outcome, because we're not going back to make a policy decision. The applicant's got not exactly what they want, but have made a small concession. Dr. Poynter has got somewhat a better result, although not all that she wants, and that's probably about as best we could do. So I'm going to second it and support it on the basis that that negotiation will proceed in good faith. The other points I would make are that we shouldn't lose sight of standing back and looking at the big picture. In the end, those petrol stations do have very lengthy use require or permissions under the planning schemes. And I will remember in my old electorate a number of them being bought up and used as 24-hour venues, and it wasn't a very happy outcome in many cases. So to turn them into residential from what is not a very attractive streetscape seems to me to be a good result, and will result, I would have thought, from a reasonable knowledge of the value of property, in an uplift in the value of properties around this development. So that's a good result as well. And as the applicant pointed out, it is within our guidelines for greater intensification, particularly in these areas of the city. So I feel that we're close to a resolution. I don't think anyone will get exactly what they want out of tonight, but with a little bit extra from the applicant by way of support for the solar panels and a little bit of concession by way of the objector, that's not all that she wants, but nevertheless, it's better than where they are now. I hope we'll get a result which will enable us not to be in VCAT. Because at the end of it, I think that's the lottery that I don't wish to be a part of, because it is a lottery. I hope in an imperfect world that's the line of best fit for all, but a very difficult decision tonight.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any speakers against the motion? Any further speakers for the motion? Councillor Mayne?
I'd just like to support the sentiments of the mover and the seconder. I think when you have competing policy goals, obviously sustainable energy and intensification and urban renewal, you need to make a decision. I think the calling in of this item by Councillor Wood to have a full public debate has been very healthy, because it's an issue we've had the odd media inquiry about it, but we haven't really formulated detailed policies, and I think there's an education and communication issue. I mean, I think we should be actively, after this experience, informing everyone in Arden Macaulay and City North that, you know, if you're on a single level, on a reasonably busy street where there is significant development envisaged, it probably wouldn't be a great idea, or you need to be aware of the implications of subsequent investment that could flow. I think the materiality question here is important. I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, it's bad luck, but I think $6,000 in terms of loss of value or amount of spend. I think there is an argument around materiality, and I hope that the applicant can deal with that with appropriate compensation or support to cope with the loss of efficiency that will flow from that. But ultimately, we have to support our planning scheme. We are encouraging more intense development in this particular part of the City of Melbourne, and I don't think that, I think in light of the concessions that have already been discussed, I don't think that the Council stepping in any further and getting involved is warranted, and I think at this point we should support what our professional officers are proposing.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Councillor Leppard, would you like to speak for the motion?
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to undermine anything that's already been said, because I think that the first three speakers have outlined the situation reasonably well. But the only thing I want to say is that the... Very well in your case, Lord Mayor. But the only thing I'd like to say is that I don't think it's necessarily a difficult decision. Certainly I don't want to support this because I can see what the consequence of supporting it will be, particularly for the main objector. But it's not a difficult decision at the end of the day, insofar that our job today is just to adjudicate the application based on whether or not it meets the planning scheme. And with the conditions imposed, as suggested by the officers, certainly I think what we'll find is that councillors all have to agree that it does. But it is extremely difficult to do that. It's a bitter pill. Couple of quick things on that. And I too would like to thank Councillor Wood for calling this in. I think having this policy debate is very important, and having this called in to prompt that debate I think has shown to be a very good thing to do. That doesn't help the main objector at all in this case, so that's no comfort to her, I'm sure. But I think it shows that we do need to do a lot more work in this area. I note that in the annual plan, which came into effect yesterday, which we endorsed at last week's council meeting, includes an initiative that we investigate the feasibility of discretionary height limits for solar or for green roofs. Now, that doesn't cover this, but we're working in this general area. I think that we should definitely revisit whether or not this does need to be a broader policy exploration. I don't know how wide this problem is. Now, your property, of course, is nowhere near the Arden-Macaulay structure plan area. Sorry, I thought I'd drop that in, Councillor Mayne. You know, probably there are many, many cases of this. And, of course, the main objector is doing exactly what the City of Melbourne would like her to do, which is to spend money because she can on sustainable infrastructure for sustainable power. So it is very difficult, but at the end of the day, it's not a difficult decision. I think that with the extra conditions, which I thank the officers for imposing, even with, I think, Martin, your words were a difficult juggling act, the place we've arrived at is the right one. So begrudgingly, I support this motion and thank officers for helping us to arrive at this conclusion.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. I'd like to just quickly close off and echo the words that I thank Councillor...
No, Councillor Roke, I think, wants to speak.
Oh, you want to speak? Sorry. Sorry, Councillor Oak, I didn't see that.
That's right. It was a subtle hand up, but then you turned your head. But just briefly, I would speak also begrudgingly in favour of this, as has been outlined by my colleagues, but just to also acknowledge that Councillor Wood called this in, and I think that, as the Lord Mayor mentioned, that we are silent on when it comes to a policy on solar panels. And whilst Councillor Leppard has acknowledged that in the annual plan we are looking at moving in this direction in our discussion and our research, it doesn't clearly say we need a policy on solar panels. And so I think that after tonight's discussion, we will have further debate and perhaps bring it forward, that decision to have a policy on solar panels. In particular, as Dr. Poynter points out, that in our planning scheme, we look at overshadowing in the spring equinox. And whilst the conditions that have been imposed and the developer has made amendments to ensure that there isn't overshadowing during the spring equinox, as Dr. Poynter points out, it's 100% overshadowing in the winter equinox. And so the discussion... Yes. Thanks for pointing that out. But that also needs to be in a conversation, and that comes up in not only around solar panels but also for open space and backyards and overshadowing in areas, especially in North Melbourne. We've seen a lot of open space being lost due to developments on either side of these properties. So it's a conversation not only about solar panels but overshadowing and where we're measuring it from, not only in spring but maybe in winter as well. So there are some comments, not directly in relation to this application, but the reason that Councillor Wood brought this forward is to bring these issues to the table.
Thank you, Councillor Oak. Any other speakers? Not okay. I'll just quickly close it off. And as been mentioned by the others, yes, Councillor Wood brought this for the purpose of highlighting the issues that we face. And I think a lot of information has been shared and discussed tonight. And I thank Mr. Williams for doing a bit of the research in presenting those information on PVs, which I wasn't aware of, and the technical capabilities. Also to acknowledge the fact that in Council's plan that there'll be work to be done in the sustainability branch with the help of strategic planning, and a report will be coming back to Council before the end of this current financial year. So hopefully we'll have clear recommendations on what actions to take heading forward. On that note, I'd like to put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, please raise your hands. I declare the motion carried unanimously. I would like to now hand the chair over to Councillor Oak to chair the meeting to relation to transport portfolio.
Thank you, Councillor Wong. There's one report from management for consideration under the transport portfolio, agenda item 6.4, Road Safety Plan 2013-2017. I would like to ask Mr. Robinson to provide a brief report, please.
Thank you, Chair. Good evening, councillors. The draft road safety plan was presented to this committee in April of 2013. And at that time, the committee resolved to defer the report to allow some time for us to do some further consultation, particularly with the motorcycle groups. Since that time, we've undertaken the required and requested consultation, and the revised draft road safety plan is before you this evening. The changes requested, and again, particularly we focused the extra consultation with the motorcycle groups who presented on the night in April, have mostly been incorporated into the draft plan, and you'll see them in the draft plan. Hopefully you have a colour copy in there, if it should have popped up in red font there. The motorcycle actions particularly are designated with an M prefix and an M1 to 12. There are three exceptions to the requested changes, which we've noted in the report, and they relate to the use of bicycle lanes by motorcycles, the introduction of motorcycle-specific and exclusive lanes, and also the proposed left turn any time at a signalised intersection. The rationale for not including those three has been incorporated into the report, but essentially the use of the bicycle lanes we considered was a safety issue for and have not included it there. We were concerned about the difference in weight, essentially momentum, so bike versus cycle. The introduction of motorcycle-only lanes is not supported by the Victorian road rules. And to get that through would require a state legislative change, and hence in the life of the nominated plan, we didn't consider that would be a useful inclusion. And also the left turn any time, the main consideration there was the very heavy pedestrianisation throughout the city, particularly the city, and the requirement on pedestrians who are not used to that to then pay that extra care. And so the whole point with the road safety plan was to avoid those interactions, and we felt that putting a left turn only, which is not a common thing in this country, would not be a useful inclusion. Having said all that, while not agreed, the basis, the conversations that we've had with the motorcycle groups have been very positive. And whilst we haven't agreed those three to be left out, we did get to a point where I think the basis was noted. There has also been other consultation, and as an attachment to the report before you is a very detailed consultation summary. The plan also includes some detailed analysis of crash statistics right throughout the city. It's a wonderful term, crash stats, but anyway, it's there. But what we would intend to do is use that data. One of the key points, and I mentioned it in April, and it was in the draft then, it's still in the draft now, is an awareness campaign. Now, there's been various taglines assigned to the awareness campaign. Move Mindfully is one. We haven't quite progressed that yet. But an awareness campaign for all people to how to use the city, whether you're on foot, bike, car, motorcycle, whatever, all working together happily to be aware of what everyone needs. So the crash stats would be used by us in an awareness campaign to target various areas, groups and or specific hotspots in the city. All of that said, I commend the draft road safety plan to you and the recommendation as noted in the report.
Thank you, Mr. Robinson. Are there any questions of Mr. Robinson? I now call on Anthony Vanderkratz, a resident, who's requested the opportunity to address the committee in relation to this matter. As you know, you've got 3 minutes.
Thank you, Councillor Oak, Lord Mayor and councillors. I'd like to congratulate the council for having come what I think is a small step forward. It is certainly an improvement of where we were 3 months ago. I'm very pleased to see that motorcycle riders and scooter riders are particularly on the agenda, and I hope that the City of Melbourne fulfils its commitment in undertaking a review of a strategy plan that would consider the needs of motorcycle riders. In respect to the issues of concerns of safety, I guess one of the biggest concerns that most people are worried about is the congestion that's been engineered by the City of Melbourne as a result of its design and particularly its bicycle path network. It is my view that this needs to be reviewed, and it has a constant review process as we progress. I think by any standard, Latrobe Street has been a complete disaster. Any safety gains that have been made from a cyclist's point of view have been transferred onto a motorist who now opens their doors onto main traffic. Of course, there's been increased congestion. Along with that comes driver fatigue and driver anger. I think it's only going to be a matter of time before there's an accident arising out of the Latrobe Street bicycle plan design, particularly in respect to the intersection of Queen Street and Latrobe Street. Swanston Street, likewise, I think has not been well managed. Cyclists are speeding through as though they have the right of way down Swanston Street, and they come first, pedestrians come second or third, or if at all, not at all. I think there's a strong need for the City of Melbourne to consider some sort of speed limit in the Swanston Street bike path area. 10 kilometres is what I would recommend. That's inconsistent with the speed limit that's placed along the South Bank Boulevard path, which is a shared pathway. I disagree at this stage, and I hope that the council will be open to consider further the possibility of sharing bike lanes with motorcycle riders in the near future. It seems to me that they are compatible. Not all lanes, of course, but some of them are. Many of the lanes within Melbourne, the bicycle lanes, are empty. You only need to ride around and the drivers will tell you that they're not filled. In fact, I've been doing some statistical counts on Princes Bridge, and there's probably no more than one per minute outside the peak hour period using that bridge. Congestion time has increased. It's doubled, and less traffic is getting through that intersection. This safety plan is a step forward, and I congratulate the council again on that, particularly Hague Paulson, who's provided some very valuable input. However, I think that we need to be vigilant. We need to have a constant review process, and the bicycle paths in particular need to be reviewed. Ideally, we would be advocating bicycle paths to be constructed in the minor streets, not in the major streets. I think that's been a big mistake, pushing ahead, developing bike paths that are underutilised in major streets. We need to rethink this policy.
Thank you, Mr. Vanderkratz. Are there any questions? No. I now call on Damien, apologies for the pronunciation, Codognotto, spokesman for the Independent Riders Group Melbourne, who has requested the opportunity to address the committee. As you've seen, you've got a three-minute limit and you'll get a buzzer at 1 minute.
Well, the Independent Riders Group is very happy with this document. It comes as one of four documents in the last 12 months that have not only included motorcycles and scooters, but have been very positive about it. One being the federal report. There were two state reports, one the parliamentary inquiry report and the other one the motorcycle and scooter tourism plan. And now we have the council's road safety plan. The plan identifies the need for better crash statistics, and we would very much support that and urge the council to look at it in the life of this plan, really making a push to get police, Vic Roads and so on to improve road crash statistics on all forms, from pedestrians up. Inclusion of parking regulations for new developments and lockers has been something that's been we've been lobbying for a long time, so that's very good. So I'd like to thank the council for giving us the extra time to consult again with the people at both the Motorcycle Committee and Engineering, and we'd like to thank Hague Paulson, Alex Gorlick, Andrew Cron, Jeff Robinson, and all the others who helped to put this plan together. We think it's a very important and significant document. And thank you for the time.
Thank you. Are there any questions? I now call on John Ecott, the executive of Victorian Motorcycle Council. Again, you've got 3 minutes of the buzzer at 1 minute.
Lord Mayor and councillors, I'm not sure we've ever explained Victorian Motorcycle Council is a representative group. We have 105 Victorian clubs and about 25,000 motorcyclists. And on behalf of every one of them, I'd like to say thank you to Jeff and to your department for listening and for council for giving the input. I did send a letter. I don't want to go over points. I would like to mention two things. One is the better data collection on R1. It's the first recommendation of the parliamentary inquiry into motorcycle safety was the issue of data, and it behoves council to do the same. We do see examples of inaccurate data being used, being expounded in media, and it doesn't help any of us. The one that springs immediately to mind is the constant reference to 5,700 cyclists using Prince's Bridge. Well, that's one day of the year, and that data comes from Bicycle Victoria. It's not representative. We know and we accept the 500 and odd that council expound. It's a matter of data collection, and we would like to see that done more accurately. We would take exception to recommendation 3.1 that sharing bike lanes is unsafe. It is currently legal. It's not unsafe. We are allowed to enter a bicycle lane 50 metres before a junction. There are no recorded accidents whatsoever between a cycle and a motorcycle. I would ask that that be borne in mind, because to just throw it out simply because it's perceived as unsafe is not borne out either by statistics or by current legislation. On the basis that M8 and M9 both recommend access to motorcycle boxes, i.e. bike boxes, we've got to get there. Currently, filtering is perceived as illegal. It's not. We are allowed to pass stationary traffic on either side. Now, we commend council for accepting that filtering is a grey area. But having done that, we've still got to get through. And 50 metres before a junction is not unreasonable and it's not unsafe. But that's a discussion maybe for another time. But I thank you again, and we are very, very pleased with this report, this plan, I say. I think that you've done a sterling job. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there any questions for John? No, thank you. Turning on and off. Thank you for your presentation. I now call on a councillor to move a motion. Councillor Leppard, is there someone who'd like to second? Lord Mayor. Okay, moved and seconded by Lord Mayor. Councillor Leppard, would you like to speak to the motion?
Thank you, Chair. Just before I talk about some of the changes that have been made since the document that we saw 2 months ago, I just want to take the opportunity to recognise that the road safety plan is a lot broader than the safety of motorcyclists, important though that issue is. And I think the work that went into that document, 99% of which is intact now as it was 2 months ago, is astonishing. It's very good, and so I thank the staff for putting it together. I do commend the Engineering Services Branch for all of the work that they do on our behalf, and I remind all residents and ratepayers that their job is to implement the decisions of the councillors. So if there's any beef with anything, the beef is with the elected representatives, not with the staff, who do an outstanding job implementing decisions on our behalf. I think that the changes to section 7.4 talking about the safety of motorcyclists are generally quite good. Many of them are, as many of our plans have, investigatory in nature, and they're very, fine to support in this instance. I'm not 100% sure what a separate motorcycle plan might include above and beyond what is already in the transport strategy and what is already in this road safety plan. We can't have a plan and strategy on everything. We've already got a few hundred more than we sometimes know how to deal with. So we'll see what comes of it. But given that that's my only question on this, I think that the plan as a whole is one that definitely can be supported. And I commend the motion.
Thank you, Councillor Leppard. Lord Mayor, as seconder, would you like to speak?
The only thing to say is, again, I echo what the mover has said. I thank our officers for the work that they've done with the motorcycle two-wheel powered group, and thank them for bringing it to our attention and working with us. The single point I want to make is that a lot of the submissions we received, both initially and through the process, weren't really about road safety. They were about road use. You know, we want to be able to do this. Whereas a road safety plan is, how do we all use it together? And that means that everybody has to make concessions. And that is a principal difference ab initio that some of those groups didn't get. But we always have that in mind. And whenever I'm faced with arguments, as we've had on Prince's Bridge or Latrobe Street or elsewhere, about the inconvenience of congestion, I kind of weigh that against the feelings that I had when that young woman was killed by a bus in Swanson Street and think, well, if it is inconvenience and a little bit of congestion versus keeping people truly safe, I know which side I come down on.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Are there any speakers against the motion? Are there further speakers for the motion? Councillor Mayne.
Look, I'm just really pleased with the different tone. And obviously I think this has been an excellent example of consultation. And our council plan of last week talks about being a responsive and transparent and open organisation, and I think this is probably one of the best case studies I've experienced in 8 months on council, where it came to a public council meeting, strong views were expressed, we changed our decision, in other words, we deferred, so there could be more input. There's obviously been some very good detailed work by the officers, and I probably will take up Councillor Leppard to a small degree in saying it's all down to the councillors who ultimately make the decisions. I think in a very detailed piece of work such as this, the reality from my point of view is that we do rely on the officers to a great degree to do the grunt work, and this has been probably more of an officer-driven process. We made the decision to further consult and defer. That was a good decision, and it's very pleasing to see that a consensus has been reached after that process of engagement and consultation. So long may this outcome be replicated across other areas of council decision-making into the future.
Thank you, Councillor Mayne. Councillor Ong, would you like to speak for the motion?
Thank you, Councillor Oak. I think my comments is that it's great to see that it's come back and it's got a lot more additions to it. They've taken on the inputs from the motorcycle riders associations and the scooter riders as well. It's also very, I raised a question in the first time it came around regarding pedestrians, and it's good to see that we actually have quite an extensive submission from Victoria Walks that talks about pedestrians, which in the end makes up the largest component of users of our city streets. And reading through it, there are a number of suggestions and things in their submission, which I consider that we probably need to look at when we look at the pedestrian plan coming up in the not-too-distant future. Because it's, in the end, every one of us, when we come into the city, whether it's by trains, buses, trams, private cars, and other vehiculous transport, we end up hitting the pavements. And when there are 800,000 people in the city during the day, during the weekday, it becomes the elephant in the room that we need to consider. So I'm looking forward to the next stage of this. But I commend this particular plan.
Thank you, Councillor Ong. If there's no other speakers, I would like to speak for the motion and not repeat what everyone else says, but reiterate the thanks to our officers for the work that's gone into the plan. I wasn't here on the for the meeting in April, but I understand the reasons why we deferred, and obviously we've had a successful outcome in the negotiation between that meeting and tonight. Just to pick up on a couple of comments, I think, again, from the Lord Mayor, that this is a safety plan, it's not a road use plan, but so often the safety issues that we see in the city are about obeying the road rules, and the campaign, the awareness campaign that Mr. Robinson mentioned that we'll be working on in the next year. We'll focus a lot on reiterating the road rules, but also, I guess, acknowledging that we have got some interesting circumstances in the City of Melbourne, not only through the intense congestion of people and other road users, but also some different road landscapes like Swanson Street and Princes Bridge. And so we do need to acknowledge that whilst it still is all about obeying the road rules, there are some conditions that have changed, and the awareness campaign will help us in that respect. But also in the plan, as you will have seen, it's an extensive plan, but there's also a lot of neat environmental design solutions to overcome some of the safety issues that we do see. And so I look forward to seeing the plans as they come through the plan, through the strategy, into how we do address issues, not just through awareness campaigns, but also through the design of our streets. So I put the motion to the vote. All those in favour, raise their hands. It's passed unanimously. Thank you.
Handball. This concludes the reports from management to be considered. There is one item of general business to be considered, and that is the notice of motion from Councillor Oak regarding Woolworths North Melbourne development. I call on Councillor Oak to move a motion with respect to this matter.
Well, I will move the motion on the screen. There you go.
Is that seconded? Councillor Leppett, thank you. Councillor Oak.
It's fairly explanatory and detailed, the motion before us and the briefing note before, the background provided in our notes as well, that we've been through a lengthy process at council, as have the residents in North Melbourne, in opposing this development by Woolworths. The outcome is not what either the councillors, the council or the residents wanted, unfortunately, but a decision has been made to not pursue it to Supreme Court for matters that will be detailed to residents via the Chair of Planning, Councillor Ong, and the Planning Department. But this notice of motion, I guess, acknowledges that the community is still concerned, that council is still concerned, and that whilst we're not going to object further to another level, we would still like to make sure the board of Woolworths understand the concern of council and residents with this decision, and how it does not meet our expectations in this area, or our desire and our future plans of planning in this area of the City of Melbourne. So I move the motion, noting that there is support from the residents, represented by the group RAID, for such a motion, and I look forward to a response from the board, but I don't expect one.
Seconder.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Thank you, Councillor Oak, for putting this together. As she alluded to briefly, it's a result of a meeting which also Councillor Main and Ong were at, and we hope reflects that Council is working with the community in their concerns. As Councillor Oak also said, both the Council and the residents at large, as far as the Council laws can tell, are of the viewpoint that's expressed well in this motion. This motion does do another thing. It acknowledges the City of Melbourne's decision not to appeal the VCAT decision. Now, anyone who knows that the timeline is up would know that that is the case, but we haven't actually formally acknowledged that in open session, so it's important that we do that. Now, that doesn't give effect to anything, we're just noting it. Now the reasons for that are varied. I'm not sure if we're going to go into that now, but certainly I again begrudgingly, like a previous item, was happy to see that happened, even though it didn't happen in open session, but I certainly supported that. Where we've arrived at here, though, is something that we should be under no illusions of. We don't necessarily expect Woolworths to drop everything and look at the motion and look at the letter that's going to come as a result of this motion and necessarily make drastic changes. The legal process has concluded, as I mentioned. But what we can do as a council, we don't know what the success might be like, but what we can do as a council is suggest to Woolworths that the sorts of things that will make for a healthier, friendlier neighbourhood are X, Y and Z, and I think that's what we're doing here. So I commend Councillor Oak for putting it together and wording it in such a fashion, under no illusions of what may or may not happen at the end of this, but I think it shows that Council's got the interests of the community in mind when it works in this area, so I support it.
Is there a speaker against the motion? Is there a further speaker for the motion?
Lord Mayor.
Councillor Oak.
I thank Councillor Oak for putting this, bringing this forward. We had plenty of lengthy discussions with the residents and also RAID. I guess if we go back to the history of this, with many developments in the city, the developers or the applicants will spend a lot of time with council and we try to negotiate an outcome that's acceptable. In this particular case, the representatives of Woolworths meeting us and then later on meeting the councils at the North Melbourne Recreational Centre basically sent a very clear message. We're going to do what we want. And that's, I guess, the imperative when we decided that we were going to fight this because they just ignored the height limits, then they went beyond what we were working with them for. The unfortunate outcome, as we all have been made aware, VCAT ruled against us, and we did consider going to appeal at the Supreme Court. But the legal advice, extensive legal advice we had, was that there wasn't a case to appeal against on a point of law. If there was an error in a point of law, then we could. That was the unfortunate case that we didn't have that, and VCAT's decision was very carefully worded to not head down that path of they made an error in law. I think this together with a particular request from the group to provide them some more details so that they can report back to all their members, which planning officers are finalising, will close the loop on this particular episode, which has taken a lot of time, effort and money, but it's also sending a clear message, I guess, to others who are coming to do developments of this nature within the City of Melbourne that they need to be prepared to work with us or fight us.
Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Main.
Yes, I'm happy to support this item. I was nervous about embarking on a Supreme Court process in light of the spend we'd already done and the fairly fairly clear decision from VCAT, not leaving too many grounds for us to pursue this further. But I think that from my experience in dealing with Woolworths, I think there's a bit of a cultural problem and that there's a level of arrogance and a crash through that you didn't see in the Woolworths of Paul Simon's era, you know, 20 years ago, that they've got so big, they're so powerful, Australia's unique in the world with a duopoly, Coles and Woolies, with more than 80% of the grocery market, that they just throw their weight around. And
I mean, in my previous experience at a PSC in the suburbs, they were the only applicant that actually took us to the Supreme Court. They just went, you know, they turned a supermarket into a Dan Murphy's. We said we'd like a supermarket back and offered, tried to sell our land to Aldi, and they sued us in the Supreme Court and we spent $300,000. And they just do that willy-nilly. It's just their attitude. So I read in the Fin Review today that relations have totally broken down with the ACCC and Coles and Woolies over this sort of voluntary code of conduct. I've never heard federal politicians so at them in terms of their abuse of market power and the way they go their suppliers and treat farmers. And I think this is just another small example of the arrogance that comes with too much power. And I think that we've been on the wrong end of it in this case. And I think in light of all of those, that context, I'm more than happy to put my name to a letter to the board of Woolworths. I've run for their board 3 times before. It doesn't work. And I just would make note to Ray that the annual meeting is in Sydney on November 26th, and they do have 416,638 retail shareholders. And if you run for the board, your message will be sent to all 416,638 shareholders, and it's a very cheap direct mail campaign to do. So maybe that's one way to make the board sit up and take notice, and I strongly support this motion and encourage others to pursue it at the annual meeting.
Thank you. Is there a further speaker to the motion? In that case, could I add one little bit as well? And I want to echo something of what Councillor Mayne said. I'm sure that Woolworths run a very civil boardroom, but what they've given us is a very brutal public outcome. We've seen earlier tonight, on a much smaller scale, a fair and good negotiation between parties who were some way apart. And they may not get to the point where they both agree. But nevertheless, there was the preparedness to come in here and say, these are important issues to us in terms of our business, in terms of the way we live, and how can we get as close as possible and get an outcome that way. That is not what has happened in this case. We've got one of the biggest corporates in Australia, as Councillor Mayne said, deciding that the rules don't apply to them, or if they do, they will use them in ways that best suit them. I don't think that Woolworths as a company is actually bigger as an entity than North Melbourne or the City of Melbourne. I think both are far more important to our general community than Woolworths. And I want to pick up a word. I wrote down here a phrase for myself which Councillor Mayne echoed. I wrote down corporate arrogance, and I was pleased to hear Councillor Mayne use that term, because that's what this is. And I bet I know what they will say when they get our letter in that civil boardroom. They will console themselves with the fact that the people of North Melbourne will shop here, and they probably will. They'll use the open space here, and they probably will. And they'll say to themselves, and they'll get over it. And I don't think they will. I don't think they will. I think what this corporate has done to a very proud and tight-knit community is shameful in an era when we talk about going beyond corporate social responsibility to an idea of shared responsibility, which is more than just doing good works with your workforce on the weekend or having a nominated charity. It's actually being a part of the communities in which you work and sharing the responsibility between you for enhancing that community. Woolworths have, I'm sure in their own minds, bought us off and bought off the community through a very desirable supermarket, and that's a good thing, and some open space. But as for the rest of it and the development, I feel very frustrated that we have come to the end of the VCAT course of action, and I would concur with Councillor Mayne, it would be folly to pursue it further, but it grates on me to say that, and even if we do nothing but land a letter in that boardroom, I think that this motion is very well founded, and I thank Councillor Oak for bringing it. Is there a further speaker to the motion? Councillor Oak, do you wish to conclude the debate?
Only to thank my colleagues for all of their words, and I don't speak on behalf of RAID, not being a member, but I think that RAID would be glad to listen to the audio of tonight's meeting and hear the words that have been spoken from my colleagues. And they do voice the concern, I think, of the whole council in our, where we ended up and where we have ended up in terms of this motion in that we're left with writing a letter to directors of Woolworths pleading that they might still listen to the concerns of the community, noting that they probably won't. But yeah, I will pass on to Raid the suggestion that they've listened to the audio of tonight's meeting. The only thing I wanted to add at the end was to note at 1.5, I have noted management's intention to review local traffic in the area. It is an ongoing concern of residents surrounding the towers that are proposed, and whilst there's a lot of traffic calming in the area, we did convene a meeting at the last council, and we've held a meeting subsequent in this council with residents in that area. We've conducted a lot of traffic analysis, looking at the possible effects of the new residents, and whilst there is already a lot of traffic calming in the area, there is perhaps some further tweaks that we can do to ensure that the amenity of North Melbourne is not too affected or increase the effect of the towers that we are left with in the community. So I note that it's coming, and residents know that a resolution will come to a future Melbourne committee relating to the local traffic management in the area around Woolworths.
Thank you. I'll put that motion. All those in favour? That is carried unanimously. Thank you. This concludes the items of general business. Are there any items of proposed urgent business? In that case, we provide a 15-minute period for members of the public to ask questions. Questions should not be greater than 90 seconds in duration. I now invite questions. Members of the public, would anyone like to ask a question? Anthony.
Mr. Lord Mayor, through you, the City of Melbourne, I understand, has a statutory obligation both within the Local Government Act and also its local laws to ensure that residences or premises on streets display their address sign number. It's a considerable concern as more and more developments and shops are taken up and they're not displaying any form of number. This adds to congestion within the cities. People have to circulate to try and find what address number they're referring to. My question is, what steps, if any, is the City of Melbourne taking to enforce those laws and to try and bring about a better numbering system within the buildings within the city?
Jeff, do you want to take that on notice? I mean, this is a matter that's been raised with us before with some degree of unanimity among councillors that it's a good idea to have this numbering on shops, but what is the answer to, A, the statutory requirement for numbering, and B, whether we are moving further?
Lord Mayor, may I take that on notice?
You may take it on notice. Does any councillor wish to comment? Councillor Mayne.
I think my memory is it's a $200 fine is that we can impose, but very few councils actually do it. So if you could certainly put a couple of fines on and get the message out if that was a priority.
I think Councillor Foster.
Thank you, Lord Mayor. Just a quick comment, and just in relation to fines and on an issue like this, I would hope that we don't move down the road too quickly of slapping fines on people. Not to discount what you're saying, Councillor Mayne, I hear where you're coming from, but I would hope that we could move more towards some sort of re-education and awareness about, you know, what's actually required before we go direction.
I take both of those comments on board, and it is a good question and a good issue, and Jeff Lawler has said we will take it on board and try to provide an answer at our next FMC. Thank you. Are there any further questions? Yes. Thank you.
Thank you, Lord Mayor and Councillor. I'm Megan Cusack. I'm actually from RAID, so I want to commend you all for the comments and the motion that you put forward this evening. I'm particularly pleased by your advice, Councillor Maynard, to actually run for the board, so we might actually do that. Two things that I'd like to say tonight. Can you provide us advisers to particularly Councillor Ong as to when we will receive on public record the details as to why the City of Melbourne have not pursued this matter to Supreme Court? So if you could take that one on board. And also, we're particularly keen to understand the process that the Council will take during construction and post-construction as to maintaining a vigilance of the management of construction and the impacts on our local streets. Us as the community, there's been a lack of consultation in the past. We don't want to see that happen, and particularly as a mother of young children, it's a very dangerous place to be at the moment. We must commend you for the traffic calming currently put in place at Dryburgh and Harris. It's fantastic. We'd welcome discussion to implement further traffic calming particularly both during and post-construction as a result of Woolworths. So our question again is, what are the processes is the council going to take to put vigilance in place regarding construction and post-construction on Woolworths development? So.
And I'll also take your question about making our advice available. Councillor Wong, do you wish to comment on that?
Yes, my apologies. Daniel Susan, who's the senior officer, been working on the response. Unfortunately, he hasn't been well. He's been away and he's just come back. So I've further chased it up with him. He hopes to get it completed so I can forward to rate very shortly. And I think the other questions, we'll take that on board under building construction management, and Warren Knight's group will probably follow that up.
Jeff, do you want to make comment on that?
Lord Mayor, normally, and I'm looking at Martin Williams just to confirm this, normally planning permits for developments of this scale have a condition in them which requires a construction management plan to be produced. And that construction management plan adopted by the responsible authority, which in this case is the Minister for Planning, where the condition is applied there, but is also adopted by the City of Melbourne under its local laws so that the City of Melbourne can enforce it. It is then a matter for our site services branch to continue to monitor and work with the with that construction management plan to make sure that it's lived up to.
And I'll take the third part of Megan's part, if I could split it, which was traffic calming, not just during construction, but following that, and take it that under 1.5, following the review of local traffic management, that any further traffic calming measures would come before us as recommendations as a result of that study, I presume.
Lord Mayor, you're correct. There will be a need for traffic management during construction because of construction, but what is being looked at and has been for some time with engineering services and community groups is traffic management in perpetuity for the area, and that's coming forward.
Thank you. Megan, does that take care of what you want? Thank you. Are there any further questions? In that case, can I thank members of the public for their interest and attendance and declare the meeting closed at 7:17.